This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
Good morning. I'm Ann Holliday along with Bob Harris. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Ann.
And if you have a question for Bob, you can give us a call at 368-9372, 368-WESB. Or you can send us an email at garden@wesb.com, or you can go to our Facebook page, WESB's Facebook page, and leave us a question there, because we are live on Facebook. And so Bob has a ton of stuff to talk about, but he has like three questions to start with right off.
Yeah.
And I'm going to move your mic a little bit.
Okay.
There we go.
All right. The first question, is... from Connie, and she's looking to plant some flowers to represent her boy's birth stones. And the birth stones' colors are blue, purple, and white. And they could all be different kinds, but they need to like sun because her yard is full sun most of the day. So she's looking for some suggestions. And I got a lot of them for the blue. Now, blue is probably the rarest color in nature. That's going to be the only problem. So a lot of us gardeners, you know, accept even this as a blue. Even though it is purple, we have to accept that as blue. But there are some blue. Hawaiian blue ageratum is a good one, or ageratum. Then there's a blue delphinium. And there's another blue, and Evolvulus, it's called. Evolvulus. Those are about the only three blues. You know, they say there's petunias that are blue, and there's even verbena that is blue. But they are really purple, but you have to use them as blue. Really, there's blue in them. Red and blue makes purple. So there's blue in them.
Okay.
So those would be my suggestions for the blue. The purple is going to be real easy to get. Again, we could use the purple salvia. There is a bluer salvia yet, too. But there's a lot of purple petunias, purple ageratum again.
Pansies.
Pansies are purple. Yeah, good. Thanks, Ann.
Well, that's my dad's favorite plant. So.
Oh, okay.
Flower.
So there's lots and lots of purple out there. Million Bells comes in a purple. There are dahlias that come in a purple. There are dahlias that you can pass off as blue, too. They're all sun lovers. So there's a few suggestions for them. Then white, of course, white is going to be the easiest one to find. You can get that in just begonias. This is a waxleaf begonia, white waxleaf begonia. You can get that in salvia. You can get it in alyssum. There's also, that's right, there's a blue alyssum and a purple alyssum, too. You can get it in million bells. Geranium. You can get it in geranium. White is going to be real easy to find. It's the blue that's going to be the most difficult. So you may have to use your imagination, you know, and push the envelope on the blue. But the white and purple, easy to find.
I knew you would love that question.
Yeah, I do like that. Yeah, and good for you, Connie. Another question. A listener called earlier this month, and she has knockout roses along her walkway, and the branches are now growing out over the walkway. And how far can she trim them back without harming them? First of all, I have to say, shame on you. You didn't plan for the full growth of the plant. The knockout roses can get about 5 foot wide. So they should have been planted at least 3 foot off the walkway. But now that they're there and they're starting to grow, yeah, you can prune them right off the walkway with no trouble at all. As you trim it away from the walkway, more growth will occur to the sides and out away from the walkway. It won't harm those knockout roses at all. They're such a hardy rose. They're grown on their own roots that they accept a lot of pruning and training. You'll be training them, really, by pruning them off the walkway, forcing them to grow the other way. So don't worry about that, and the sooner the better that you'll start pruning them, and then they'll start forcing that growth the other way, away from the walkway.
Okay.
Good question, though. But still, when any time you're planting, you know, look at what the plant will be in full size and make adjustments for that. Like the knockout rose, like I said, it's going to grow to 5 foot wide, so at least 2.5 to 3 feet away from a structure so it can grow its own way.
Okay.
And another question is, do you treat succulents and cacti the same way in terms of watering? This is kind of a container with no drainage. Yes, that's okay. Now, you have to be, since there's no drainage, you have to be real careful about the watering. I've always suggested, you know, when you water, you always want to give it a good drink so it drains through and flushes the old fertilizers, unused fertilizers out, and pulls oxygen down. But when you've got a container without drainage, you can't do that. So you have to give it less water, maybe half the water or even less than half the water that you normally would, so that the soil will absorb all the water, so no water will lay in the bottom of that container, because as it does lay there over time, it can become rancid or like a swamp, and of course give off methane gas, and that will damage the plant. So a lot less water, and then maybe you might have to water a little more often because you are using a lot less water. But with cacti, you know, watering once a month usually is fine. So don't think you have to water them every week. Cacti, you know, they absorb the water, then they store it for when they need it. So not like a lot of other plants that store it and or not that drink it up and use it right away. Cacti will store it and save it for those dry times, because they do come from the desert where it can go months without water, any rain at all. So they are capable of holding water. So don't water them very often.
Okay.
Very little in that container that doesn't drain, and not very often.
Okay. Sounds good. And if you have a question for Bob, you can give us a call at 368-9372, 368-WESB. You can send us an email at garden@WESB.com. Or go to WESB's Facebook page. That is facebook.com, WESB 1075. And we are live on Facebook there. And so you can ask your question there, too. And if you're with us on Facebook Live, you know that Bob has lots of flowers in the studio today.
Yeah.
So why don't we talk about those?
Oh, can I first talk about these?
Yes.
These
yes,
two little
please.
Guys? I brought in, because I'm so fascinated with carnivorous plants, plants that eat meat, and not like normal plants that have to have soil and get all their minerals and food from that. These guys don't. They do have a root system, but that's only to hold them in place and to get a little bit of water. Other than that, they get all their nutrients from insects or any kind of meat that they can capture. And so I'm going to have to get up a little bit to show you, because these are pretty small here so far, but they're such fascinating plants.
They're really, really pretty, too. And so, and I'll take pictures of them later and put them up on Facebook so you can see them. But that's really cool. Yep, we can see them. And Bob said that when that gets bigger, the top part of that little part that's hanging down, it'll open up and you can see the insect or whatever going in. And that's really cool.
Yeah, what's neat about this particular one, it's a pitcher plant, and it has a lid on the pitcher. And these pitchers can get quite large. And when it's ready to accept meat or an insect, the lid will open up. And, of course, some insects will go in there because there's a little nectar down in the bottom there. And, of course, they'll get wet feet, and the inside of the pitcher is slippery, so they can't get out. And after it's full, then the lid will close, and the plant will start to digest those insects and, of course, use that as its food. So they're fascinating for kids and grown-ups to watch. I love watching the whole process. And if you really want to see what's happening inside, you can take a little flashlight and put on one side, and you look through the other side, and you can see the insects in there.
Oh, that's really cool.
And it'll keep producing after that one gets full. It'll produce another picture that will take the place, because once that one's full, it's not going to reopen and accept insects again. It's going to close up and digest everything there. And then, of course, then that picture is going to die off, and a new one will start to grow. And I know everybody can't see that, but it's, and then that will take the place and start the process all over.
Oh, wow. That's really neat.
Now, another one, and I'm going to get up and show this one here. This is also a pitcher plant, but works a little differently.
This one's really pretty. It's, I wish I could remember the name of the plants. I always call them polka dot plants. they have the pink and white on them, and they're just really pretty. I love those plants. And I didn't know that they came in the carnivorous variety, too.
Now, I hope you got a good view of that, because it's an open picture, but you can see the structure on the very top that I touched is very colorful. And I've talked about that before. That's an insect landing pad.
Okay.
The insects see that, and it directs them to land there. And then quite often, then they'll fall into that open pitcher. And, of course, that, again, is full of a liquid, enzymes in it, that will dissolve the insect. And, of course, the plant can feed off that. And these can get quite large. They're going to get maybe triple the size of that. So they can collect a lot of insects, and some pretty large insects. Even some in South America will collect polywogs and frogs and even a bird or two.
Wow.
They can get so large. So they're just fascinating. And if you wanted to grow them at home, they all grow in the swamp. So they've got to be a little bit of water. So at least a bit. Take a saucer and with a half inch of water, and then you can put the pot in also. There's always water there. They have to have that water constantly. You just can't grow it like this without a saucer and water it from time to time. It'll be fine for a long while, but eventually it will stop growing. So in about a half inch of water, just like it would be in the swamp, so they can continually get water and collect insects. And, you know, we all have insects even in our home. You
right.
Know, a lot of them we probably never see, but they're there, and these plants will attract them and catch them eventually and use them as their food.
Those are the coolest things.
They are.
I love those. And we're going to take a break and hear from our friends from Worth W. Smith. But if you have a question for Bob, you can give us a call at 368-9372-368-WESB. You can send us an email at garden@WESB.com, or you can go to Facebook, facebook.com/WESB1075, and we will be right back.
Give your lawn a healthy head start with a visit to Worth W. Smith Company Hardware. You'll find varieties of grass seeds for every use, plus 10-10-10 fertilizers, mulches, and limes. And don't forget the seed spreaders, handheld sizes for the small jobs and push models for the bigger ones. You'll also find a nice selection of garden seeds, patio blocks, and railroad ties at just $14.99 each. Ready for a new mower? See Worth Smith for a great deal on a new Toro mower. If you need it for spring, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
Welcome back to The Gardening Show, and if you have a question for Bob, give us a call at 368-9372-368-WESB, or send us an email at garden@WESB.com, or go to facebook.com/WESB1075. And back to Bob.
Okay, now I want to talk about the plants, but kind of keying in towards the cemetery plantings that are going to be coming up. And a lot of people wonder, what are some of the best plants? Now, this here collection here is red, white, and blue. And maybe You remember I've talked a lot about symbolism, and I'm going to talk a lot about it all through the year because I think it's important.
I think so, too.
You shouldn't just throw a whole bunch of plants together because they look pretty together. You should, from time to time, put some meaning into it, like our first questionnaire, the lady that wanted to do the colors for her kids. And, of course, this would symbolize America or the armed services, red, white, and blue. And it just stands out real well. So in this one here, and these are all great cemetery plants. They just do very, very well there. I got the white flowering green wax leaf begonia. Wax leaf begonia. That's a real good one. It accepts full sun or part shade. It's a pretty versatile plant, so you can grow that just about anywhere. But it also stays nice and short, so it doesn't cover up the headstones. Same with the geranium. The geranium accepts a lot of different conditions, and even if you forget to go up there and water every week, you know, the geranium's still going to be fine. But once in a while, go up there, pick off the old blossoms and pull a couple of the old leaves, and everything will be fine in the geranium world. They're a very forgiving plant. And that's why they've been around for hundreds of years in our home gardens, because a geranium is just a great, great plant. And it comes in a lot of colors, too. The wax leaf begonia is going to come in a lot of colors. I have a white here, but it also comes in red flower and also a pink flower. And the geranium, they'll come in a lot of colors, red color, white color, bluish color, a lot of a light pink and a dark pink. This here, bright red and a dark red, lots of different shades. So it's just a great, great plant. And then behind, for my blue, this is a purple salvia, but I'm passing it off as a blue. And there are blue salvias too. So look for them if you really want a blue, but I like the blue salvia. And you can see that, the shorter plant in front and going back to the taller plant in back too. So, read the tag there, make sure you got your heights right, and that way it all shows up a lot better, especially with this red, white, and blue combination. All great, great cemetery plants, also great in your yard, too.
I think people, even though that's purplish, I think people would get the idea with the red and the white that it's supposed to be blue.
Yep, but it's not our fault that nature can't produce much blue, you know?
I got a theory on that just this morning. I developed a theory that with the sky being blue most of the time, we don't need more blue.
That's right. Yeah.
that's my theory.
I'll take that one too.
Okay.
Yeah. So let me show some more here.
Okay. I just love these. And Bob, you might remember a salmon-colored geranium that Bob brought in last year. I'm happy to tell you that it is still alive in my living room. So there are some things I didn't kill.
Okay, now these are all geraniums too.
Oh.
But I wanted to show how colors can affect the space. And in here I've got the lighter pink. And then this kind of a mauve or a real light purple, and then going back to a bright red. And that can dictate on how your eye perceives the space, as when I'm doing it this way, with the cooler color in front and the warmer color in back, it kind of makes the space look a little smaller, which if that's what you're after, that's fine. Now, if I turn it around and get a good view of that first. And sorry for those people that aren't viewing, but I'm trying to explain as best
I
can.
Use your imagination.
Now, when I turn it around, the red jumps out at you first. And your eye slowly goes back to a cooler color and then further back for a cooler yet color. So that makes the space look a lot deeper that way. So if you're trying to make your garden look bigger, then possibly do it that way.
Okay.
Put your hot or warm colors in the front and your cool colors in the back. And that way you can make the space look bigger. But I'm going to show you another way.
Okay, cool. If you're not on Facebook Live, I wish you were, because these flowers are just beautiful. The purplish-pinkish one is gorgeous. I think I need one of those in my living room. You have a red petunia.
Okay, I'll describe what they are first. This is a New Guinea impatient. That's the sun-loving impatient. But it still can be grown in part shade, too. Then behind it, I got a red flowering petunia. And then behind that is a red foliage grass.
Okay.
Now, the reason I place these...
Can I?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Good morning. Do you have a question for Bob?
I have two vines coming off my grapevine. One's going right, one's going left. I think there's another one that looks like it's growing towards the ground. I think you told me to just leave one vine on there and cut the other two.
Well, no, I hope I didn't. You want to have one main stem coming out of the ground.
Okay.
And then you do want one stem going to the right and one going to the left in opposite directions.
Well, so the third one then that's like trailing on the ground, got stuck in the fence and going towards the ground, I can just clip that one off?
You sure can, yep. Because you're just training new grapevines, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is, I think, the third year. It hasn't had any grapes yet. It's got a couple little green leaves on it right now, little buds budding.
Okay. Yeah, we got to be patient as gardeners. Sometimes it takes a while to reap our benefits.
So I don't trim anything off the ends of last year's growth or nothing?
Not yet, but as they get older and bigger, yeah, you're going to want to trim those ends, and they usually trim them back to like 7 or 10 buds left on the stem that you want to keep.
Okay.
Because you don't want them to just keep growing in length, you know, forever, because that can get out of hand, and as it grows out further and further, it has a rougher time supporting fruit. So we do want to keep them kind of short. So as they're growing out there, you know, 5 or 6 feet, don't let them go past that point.
I know a guy, he's got a neighbor with a grapevine, and there's grapes 40 feet up in this pine tree.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that can happen. It has a nice structure to hold on to, so it can do that.
It's got a big trunk.
But you're growing them on a fence, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I appreciate the information, and I'm going to have to check out those flowers online.
Okay, good. Good luck with those grapevines.
Thank you.
And if you have a question for Bob, you can give us a call at 368-9372, 368-WESB, or you can send us an email at garden@WESB.com, or go to facebook.com/WESB1075.
I should say one more thing about grapevines, though. You know, that the way I'm explaining it is the way they do it to really produce a good crop. Now, if you just let a grapevine go wild, it's still going to produce. But the grapes may start to get a little smaller as it goes up higher. And the big producers, they like nice big bunches of grapes with every grape in there really big and plump. So they hold the plant back. They trim it hard twice a year. So it can just carry a few fruit that do get bigger and the clumps get bigger. But if you want to just let it go wild and sprawl all around or cover up a big area, that's fine too. You'll still get grapes.
All right.
Yeah.
And can you get more than just Concord grapes around here? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you sure can.
All right. Okay. I'm just working on Facebook. Live stopped on us, so I'm just working on that.
Okay.
So
the plants, the New Guinea impatient, petunia, and then the purple fountain grass. Here, the reason I've got them placed that way is the bigger leaf in front here, that we call, as texture means, that's the coarsest texture. And, of course, the grass would be the fine texture.
Okay.
So that can define a space, too. The coarser texture is picked up by your eye first. And then we go back a little bit finer texture with the petunia, smaller leaves. Then your eye starts to see that. And then last, the real fine texture, the grasses, and there's other plants with fine textures too, makes the space look a lot deeper that way.
Okay.
And, of course, then the height too. We always want to try to keep the shorter ones in the front going back to the taller ones in the back. You know, in most gardens, you know, if you got a real big garden, it's good to change it up. Sometimes put a tall one in, even in the front. So your eye slows up and doesn't just scan over the whole bed quickly. Sometimes it's hard for me to explain over the radio.
Well, because you kind of want your eye to look at each plant separately,
yeah,
along with looking at them all together.
You want your eye to go slow, yeah. Otherwise, you know, if you just had one bed of all red New Guinean patients, your eye would just scan over it in a quick hurry. But if you want all red and you want to slow down the eye, do it with texture, coarse texture in the front, and then a nice fine texture in the back, and that will slow the eye down.
Okay. Playing around with all this stuff is a lot of fun.
It is, yeah. Okay. And you know, a lot of us know that already, but we just never think about it. You know, when we're placing our plants out there, and we may do something like this here and say, geez, I like that. I want it all red. But eventually we go, geez, that looks a little bit better that way. So, yeah, just think about some of those rules, you know, the cooler colors in the front, warm colors in the back make a space look bigger. Bigger leaves in the front, finer leaves in the back make a space look bigger, too.
Okay.
But again, there's nothing wrong with mixing it up, especially in a bigger bed, to change it around where you can have a fine texture in the center or even up front, and then a bigger texture in the back to make your eye do weird things. And it slows it up, so you enjoy the space a little more.
There's so much more to gardening than just putting plants in the ground.
There can be, or you can just put plants in the ground, too.
That's good, too.
Yeah. There are rules, and then my number one rule is to break all the rules.
That's a good one. I like that one. So if you have a question for Bob during the week, you can always send us an email at garden@wesb.com. You can give me a call. I will send that on to Bob. You can leave us a message on Facebook. You can do all kinds of stuff to leave Bob messages during the week. Best way to do it is, though, call on Saturdays.
Yeah,
because you get the feedback, and if he has questions for you, you can do that. And there's another guy who knows a lot about gardening, and he's having some gardening talks this week at Graham's Greenhouse. That would be Bill Graham, right?
That would be Mr. Bill Graham, yes.
And he's talking about vegetable gardening?
Yes, he is, yeah.
So anything you wanted to know about vegetable gardening, Bill probably knows the answer.
I'm sure he does.
I believe it's 6 to 7 on Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you don't have to go to both. One is good, but...
Yep.
But yeah, Bill Graham, he's a good guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's fun to listen to, too.
He is.
And he loves to take questions.
Okay.
And believe me, he's got it all up there, too.
Okay. But we will be back here next week to take your questions on The Gardening Show, brought to you by our friends at Worth W. Smith. Thanks, Bob.
You're welcome.